Okay, Scott, we didn't really talk about this.
Well,
we can talk about it. I mean, it's sort of, I guess we're not quite ready to go.
Okay.
Well, that's all right with you.
And I'll say it's cool. You're the chair. I love everything the chair.
Are we on?
Yeah. Okay. Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division will come to order. I'm getting pretty good at remembering that name. Wow. We'll start with Senator Dibble. Senator Dibble, you have two bills. And which one do you want to start with first?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'd like to start with the second bill, the lighting for the Minneapolis Parkway system.
Okay, we have Senate File 2436 in front of us. These are these bills in our committee officially. All right, go ahead, please, Senator Dibble.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe there's an amendment to this bill. I don't have it handy, but it's the same amendment that was offered to the Grand Rounds bill in your committee a couple
Great,
of days
thank
ago.
You. Okay, that's being passed out right now, the A1 amendment. We'll get you a copy of it.
Madam Chair, I'll just speak very, very quickly, and we have a couple of folks here from the city who will speak in more detail, or in as little detail or as much detail as you'd like. But very quickly, Madam Chair, the Minneapolis Grand Rounds system receives about including the Chain of Lakes, it receives about 15 million visitors annually. So as such, it's very much a regional system. It serves far, far more folks than just city residents or just even folks who live in my neighborhood. I think I've made the argument before when we've talked about doing major renovations to Lake of the Isles and Lake Calhoun and others. The interconnectedness of the Grand Rounds system is self-evident. As a matter of fact, last night in the Economic Development Division, Senator Tomasoni's division, we heard a proposal from the city of Richfield, and they would like to do some significant improvements to a parkway and attached to that is going to be a bike system that they were keyed up on connecting to the Minneapolis Grand Round system. So that then would connect it to the river systems down in the Minnesota River Valley and the like. The lighting in the Grand Round system is decrepit, old, broken down. It is in serious need of replacement. And so the city, which has effective, even though the Grand Rounds are operated by the city's park system, the city council, the city of Minneapolis proper itself, has taken over responsibility for the roadway and the road type infrastructure from the park board. So the city is bringing this forward as a separate entity request. With that, someone want to? Do we have enough folks to amend, make the amendment, to get that on? Yeah, I'm not on this committee.
Why don't we? We'll just put it in front of us, and we can vote later when we have a quorum present. Senator,
just very Dibble, quickly, the amendment.
We have to make one correction to the amendment on line 10.
Okay.
To change national to natural. I think that was your intention. Mr. Knopf.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think this was written to, this amendment was to 2519, and this is 2436. So just a page and line reference on 1.2 should be line 9 rather than line 13.
Okay.
And then to change the reference. Otherwise, yeah, it works.
Great. Okay. Well, we'll incorporate those changes when we vote on the amendment.
Great. And the amendment, Madam Chair, simply says that these lights, if bonding money is used for these lights will be the kind of lights that don't pollute the night sky. They're energy efficient, and they provide the highest level of security possible. That's the benefit of using excellent lighting technology when you're doing your public lighting infrastructure. Madam Chair, we have John Wirtjes from the City of Minneapolis Public Works Department, and we have Councilmember Sandy Colvinroy, who chairs the Transportation and Public Works Committee of the Minneapolis City Council.
All right. Thank you. We have time just for brief testimony, but welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. John Wirtjes, Director of Traffic and Parking Services with the City of Minneapolis. I've just got five quick slides to run through you. I believe you got them in a handout. I guess my first slide, I just wanted to be clear that the city does have 40,000 lights, but we're talking about the parkway system, which is 1,800 of them. The second slide really kind of talks about kind of the shared responsibility that the Park Board and the City of Minneapolis have relative to the lighting and the needs over the 30 years and their age. The third slide really gets into some of the issues that we're facing. The outdated mercury, which is mandated by state statute to get replaced in some form or fashion, We've also got direct burial, which is causing problems with the lighting. The lower figures kind of give you some illustrations of that. The image on the left shows you kind of the circles that we've got with lighting and stray voltage bleeding through into the ground and melting the snow around the area. The dog picture in the middle is Kiska. Kiska got shocked by the stray voltage, and so that was one of the reasons we found out about this a number of years ago. So we've been actively trying to manage and inspect that on an annual basis. And then on the right-hand side, you can kind of see what we have to do, string wire overhead, in order to effectively address those underground stray wire or direct buried wire and stray voltage issues. Likewise, this new lighting is going to save us some energy relative to the system, which helps with also with pollution, with the new fixtures being full cutoff and decreasing that upward light pollution. And likewise, this is a $15 million program to replace it in 2007 dollars.
Oh, yeah, the ones.
Excuse me. The last two images there are basically the fixture that was selected for the parkway lighting. And lastly is our program to move forward with that. You can see from the table in the lower left-hand side. Is our funding program where we're seeking a bonding request as well as matching that with city funds. So with that, Senator?
I've never heard of that being a problem that, you know, you can get an electric shock from standing next to a light pole. Is that?
I think, Madam Chair, the dog was doing more than just standing.
Oh, excuse me. Oh, I'm catching on. Okay.
There's
a little. I was going to say, does this have, you know, our little children in danger, but hopefully not.
Conductivity.
Got it. I think we, yeah. Thank you. That's all the explanation that's necessary. Oh, that's shocking. Sorry. Welcome, council member.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. As Senator Dibble mentioned, we have 15 million visitors to the Minneapolis Park System, and the Grand Rounds Parkways serve not only as connectors for all those parks, but they're parks themselves. Bikers, runners, and walkers use that space, and you realize the importance of that connectivity if you take a look at a biking map for the region. The Minneapolis Grand Rounds are really a major hub. The Cedar Lake Trail, the Kenilworth Trail, the Northeast Diagonal, the new trails being talked about into Richfield and Bloomington and Fridley all connect with the Minneapolis Trail System, and we are connected to the St. Paul Trail System. So there's an east-west metro connection there. And whether we like it or not, these systems, this interconnected trail system that is serving the suburban, many suburban residents who use it for recreation or even commuting now, this system is also used by auto commuters. It's a parkway system. And these parkways carry a lot of regional traffic, especially during the peak travel hours. So any rush hour, you get on either East River Road, West River Road, and you'll see the folks cutting out of the freeway system and major highway system. But there is no MSA funding available for these roads like there is for other major local streets. And so we're here asking for your help, recognizing the regional nature of the roads and the problem that you can see graphically depicted in the pictures. And thank you very much for hearing us today.
Thank you. We heard Senator Pogemiller's bill last week, and were you here, Councilman? Okay,
I'm sorry, I wasn't.
And Senator Dibble, I know you couldn't be here that day, so we're trying to make sure we're clear on the differences between those two bills. Go ahead, Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair. If in fact Senator Pogemiller's bill goes forward, you know, there the kind of a subset of his bill is lighting for the Grand Rounds system, and so successful at getting sufficient funding, then this bill would not be necessary.
So this is for just lighting for the whole Grand Round,
right.
And his bill was for that section that was not completed in Northeast. I mean, the underlying bill was for that, correct? Am I wrong?
And improvements.
Chair.
Plus lighting
the whole system.
He added the lighting amendment, but the lighting would be for the whole thing?
For the whole thing.
Madam Chair, I think, Mr. Mueller can, but as I understand the bill, his bill is to complete the grand rounds, the missing link, but also then do lighting for the whole. So if he succeeds, then this bill could recede. However, we've been proposing lighting for the grand round system for a number of years, so we're also going forward on a separate track, just asking for the lighting. Does that make sense?
Is there anything Mr. Mueller? To add to that? Mr.
Mueller? Madam Chair and members, I'll just quickly summarize the bill that Senator Pogemiller had. It was for $10 million. I'm looking through the handout that Minneapolis had here. It was $500,000 for the St. Anthony Bridge replacement. It had $3 million for lighting replacement, $2 million for the missing link acquisition, and then $4 million for a road, parking lot, and other improvements, and then another $500,000 for trails and related features. So the Pogemiller bill had $3 million in it for lighting, and then $2 million for the link. So then this bill is $2 million for lighting. I don't know if it's...
Well, we like yours better then. We'll it sounds like they're both for lighting for the same purpose, so
yes,
I'm not sure
correct.
Why the number is different. But if... okay, well, that's helpful to know. We'll probably prefer your number then. And we can incorporate that with his other pieces of his bill. Are there any questions? All right. Well, we're going to lay each of these bills over for committee recommendation to Senator Langseth. We're not voting on each initiative separately anyway. So we will incorporate your amendment when we have members present and just set the bill aside. So thank you so much for being here, and we'll do our best to help you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam
Chair.
Along with all our other requests. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I have a... I'm not sure if I'm ready to go on my next bill, Madam Chair, because I'm awaiting an amendment.
Oh, okay. Well, Senator Saxhog, are you ready?
Yeah.
That's fine. Well, we've got a very busy agenda, members, once again, and we're going to have to end, a few minutes early today. So we'll do our best to get through it.
Should I shut this off here?
Do you have any? How much time do you need?
What? Yes.
Do you want to go next, or do you want to take some?
Oh.
Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Today I'm introducing Senate File 2708. This is a $30 million bond request for the Forest Legacy Program. And I'd certainly like to thank the members of this committee for their past support of this program, which we use to protect our forests. We've talked about it many times, and you've heard me talk about forest fragmentation, breaking up of our large private industrial forests. And, of course, that has an adverse effect on not only the forest industry, but on recreation and certainly on wildlife management. So we feel good coming forth with this because, unlike some years and some requests where the people kind of say, trust me on this, we've already... and Forest Legacy has already completed a couple of great projects, and they've been very successful, so we think that's important. I think it's important to note that there's been some great public input on this, too. The Forest Legacy Advisory Committee has done a wonderful job of looking at the projects and then advising as to some of the some of the things that they think could be improved on, and they've been accepted. I also would note that that the dedicated funding, which will be on the ballot next fall, excuse me, has some great potential for this particular program too, and we're hoping that there and know that if that passes, there'll be a significant amount of money, what we call habitat, but. Of course, habitat is forest for sure, and so we're looking forward to that. So with me today is Art Norton from Warba, Minnesota, which is about 14 miles outside of Grand Rapids. And he's from the Nature Conservancy, and he's done a terrific job shepherding this particular program along, and he's going to give some brief testimony.
Great. All right. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee, and thank you for this opportunity to speak about the Minnesota Forest Legacy Partnership. As Tom said, I am the Itasca field representative for the Nature Conservancy and also for the Minnesota Forest Legacy Partnership. And although I knew I had a little bit of time to speak. For the record, my name is Art Norton.
Thank you.
And also for the record, I will set aside my prepared comments. I know time is short, and really in thinking about this project and how it's been and where it's gone in the last 2 years, especially where it is now and moving forward, I think I can sum up how people up in northern Minnesota generally feel about what's happening with our forests. We're worried, but we're hopeful. And I know that sounds like a pretty Minnesotan thing to say, but I think it's pretty true. If you think of the forest as a blanket, and if you've ever had the chance to fly over it up north, I think you'd probably agree. I think what we're starting to see are some holes in the blanket, and it's very literally starting to happen, and it's starting to accelerate. But again, we're hopeful. Two years ago, in 2005, several groups came together to form the Minnesota Forest Legacy Partnership. One of the members, one of the biggest, strongest members, being the state of Minnesota through the Department of Natural Resources. The rest of the partners are almost all either private or nonprofit organizations. And they include a real diverse group that usually you don't find them under the same blanket. The Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, the Chamber of Commerce, Grand Rapids Area Chamber of Commerce, and even more recently, the Snowmobile Alliance. They've come together because we've seen that by doing that, we can actually make some progress. So as Tom said, we've got two projects under our belt just in 2 years. We've got a short-term goal, 75,000 acres of working forest conservation easements in place, and we're two-thirds of the way there. I think one of the significant things is that about half of the money raised so far of upwards of $24 million has been private funds. But it is work to leverage state funds and even federal funds for the program. And to sum it up, I think I'd just say that we appreciate the state's past support. The projects are really outgrown just the Itasca region. It really needs to go statewide. As Senator Saxhog said, the report that's about to be released of the Forest Legacy Advisory Council is really outstanding, I think, and they've really done a lot of good thinking about what's needed in the future and ways to get there.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Norton. And that's I appreciate your description. It really is helpful to paint a picture for us. And, Senator Saxhog has been talking about this for a long time and really making sure that we're all aware of the fragmentation issues with the forest. So we've been very supportive as a committee of trying to help the Forest Legacy Program, as well as the LCCMR has been.
Yes,
and we had a good trip this summer up to look at one of the examples that's been put into place.
We appreciated that, Madam Chair. Actually, as you say, you have the four LCCMR members on this committee. So,
only four? Do we have all five?
Oh, is there five?
There's five, actually. Oh. Yeah, and we're all on
four
this committee.
Out of five. Yeah.
We have five. I think we have five out of five. Fredrickson, Vickerman, Chaudhry, Parisot, and me.
You.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, we're well represented. All right, and I guess the governor's recommendation for this was $9 million. The $30 million request is the same that was in the big Minnesota Environmental Partnership package bill that I was presenting, and so we know that it has broad support from all of those conservation, environmental, and resource groups across the state. So. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks for coming down to testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair,
members.
Appreciate it. Okay. Well, why don't we? Okay, we're trying to figure out who's next here. Senator Dibble, I think, is still waiting. So, Senator Vickerman, are you ready to go? Let's take your bill next. And then I can always do mine. You bet. Thank you. This bill is Senate File 2464. Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, pass out a folder that kind of shows it more. Pictures can sometimes be better than words. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to have you look at that. And I come and I looked at all the requests today. I come for a small amount of money. $300,000 versus $30-40 million is floating around in here. Should have some consideration to at least look at a small number. But what this does is it's a bond sale. We want to fix up the dam in Windham. I have Mr. Nasby from the city of Windham. Well, I'm going to have him run through it. That'd be all right, Madam Chair. He can explain it faster than I can because I know time is of importance to you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Steve Nasby. I'm city administrator in Windham. As Senator Vickerman started to speak about the city of Windham, we've got a small 100-foot dam across the Des Moines River in Windham. It's right near one of our parks, Island Park. Last spring, the water decided to go around the dam. Rivers sometimes have a mind of their own. And because it's only 100 foot wide, that's part of the reason that the river needed a larger channel. So this is the second time in the last 40 years that it's gone around. This time, when it went around, we started working with the DNR, and they came up with a bunch of ideas for us. One of the ideas that they have is that they're not going to let us put in a new wing wall or replace the existing structure the way it is. There are drowning hazards due to the roller effect for the low overhead dam. They're also concerned about fish passage. So those are some of the discussions we've had with them. The DOT has also weighed in on it. They've got two bridges. One is Highway 71 bridge downstream, and then there's a State Highway 62 bridge upstream. So they're concerned of the hydrology and the effects that they're going to have on those dams. So the DNR is telling us we'd like the dam taken out for fish passage and eliminate the roller effects and the drowning. The DOT is telling us you need to leave the dam in because it's going to have effects on the bridge. So we're kind of caught a little bit in between. What we've done is we've hired an engineering firm to look at the dam structure to see what kind of condition it's in. I got that report this morning. The dam structure itself is in very sound condition. So really, I think we're going to go to the do a feasibility study next, and the full range of options are on the table, from removal to some type of removal with restoration. And I think probably the two most viable options would be one of what was done up on the Red River, where they took it, had an existing dam, they put rocks on the downstream side. That eliminated the roller effect and it allowed fish passage to go over. That had the effect of maintaining the hydrology upstream. And I think that's something the citizens of Windham and certainly the property owners along the river are very concerned about. The other option would be to use the dam structure as part of a riffle system where you would step down. And so those are really the two most viable options we're looking at. And as Senator Vickerman stated, pictures may be worth a thousand words, so there are a number of pictures in here that show you what the river looks like now in the condition. In October, we had a lot of rain. There were some high water shots, and then there's a couple of low water shots from July. And I think probably the most telling of the two, I think in the second page from the end and the third page from the end, are both shots of the river upstream from the dam taken from the same spot. One of them in the October, you can see the river is very full. And that's what the community is used to having through Windham. We have our annual river fest. There's a lot of fishing. There's some boating, some canoeing that takes place along the river. And then there's also a shot second to the last page, which is July, and that's looking upstream, and you can see the river is just a trickle through town, and that's what the community is afraid of. So as we look at these options, I think removal or do nothing are pretty much two options we won't pursue. But looking at that restoration, renovation with the rocks and the downstream side or replacing with riffles, I think are the two things we'd like to do. We are moving forward having, we had the structural analysis done. We'll get our full-blown feasibility study done soon. The city of Jackson, which is about 18 miles south of us, has just gone through a very similar study. I believe they had $300,000 in bonding 2 years ago. They have just decided to replace their dam with a riffle system. So bar engineering had been down. We've done a lot of review with the Jackson project, so I think we have some good starting points for City of Windham. And so if this bonding request were approved, we'd be able to certainly move ahead in the next couple of years. Senator Dang, would you like to add?
Well, Madam Chair, you know it's very important to keep a dam. Once you take a dam away from a stream, it never comes back. And the City of Windham and the patrons and my constituents want the dam to be there, put it back like it used to be. So I just bring this forward to you. We'll see how it fits in the big picture. As I said, I suppose if I put $3 million, you wouldn't even have heard the bill. So $300,000, it might have some help. So again, I know your time is precious, and if you don't have any questions, Madam Chair, I'd like to personally thank you for letting us bring the bill forward. Mr. Nasby had a chance to be here today to explain it more than just a legislator to a legislator. So,
no, I appreciate that. Thank you. And the pictures are helpful to so we can visualize this. Is this so? This $300,000 would be enough for whatever option? Would this or would there be a local contribution?
There would certainly be a local contribution, Madam Chair. The city would put money into it. We have talked to U.S. Fish and Wildlife. There might be a possibility of some fish passage money there. Mm-hmm. The DNR has indicated some willingness to participate, depending on the option we pick. And certainly we have a local conservation, Cottonwood County Conservation Club, that indicated that they may put some money into it too, as long as there's increased recreational opportunity. So those are some other sources that we have looked at. The Senate Capital Investment Group was down this summer, and I think that was very helpful. So okay. We certainly appreciate their time.
Very good. All right. Are there any other questions? Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yep,
thank you,
Madam. Try to help you. I see that. Thank you. Senator Dibble, is he still out working on his bill?
I'm
you still work a little bit more work? Okay. Senator Metzen, we're ready to take you. You've got about half the agenda today, so.
I didn't hear what you said, but I'm sure you
Welcome.
thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to present
the bonding request to this committee. We've got kind of three that are this handout. Kind of a colored. I'm going to work off of that. It's pretty. Hopefully it's in there. Did we get this?
Yes.
We have it, yes.
It's coming. We'll get it right now. Thank you, Garrett. Appreciate it.
That's from the city manager and parks director from the community association. Paul, here with me today.
That's an introducing Madam
Chair,
staff.
Let me start up here. The first bill we're going to deal with is
Senate File 2466. This is a bill that passed Senate in the House and went to the governor, and it was vetoed.
This deals with the North Urban Regional Trail underpass of 19th Avenue in the city of South St. Paul. I might add,
this is not a South St. Paul
park or trail. This trail goes all the way from
Hastings, Minnesota, Minnesota, going through Invergrove, St. Paul, St. Paul, Mendota Heights, Mendota, Ramsey County,
Lilydale, and it catches up to the Mendota Bridge in the pretty much south of the Minneapolis area. And I
should look at the map,
but I'm sure there's trails that lead from there somewhere else too. But again, I emphasize
this is not
South St. Paul per se, and we were granted last year before the veto, $940,000 for this tunnel. What it does is it completes
the trail
through those towns I just mentioned. Right now, it's a very hazardous
situation.
People have to go up a county highway to get over, to get back to the trail. They could provide an underpass.
Again, primarily
safety, but secondly, for handicapped citizens that like to use the trail. And this also will connect to the cross from Battle Creek. Well, actually, it's on this side of the river, but to St. Paul on the home of the airport, too.
But you can see it's an integral part of the whole equation.
And it's got to get done. And quite frankly, could have done it last year with $940,000, and we're up to
$1,400,000, but it's to complete the region.
And contiguous to this, you can see the circle on the map, that's where the tunnel is, if you're looking at that.
But to the right of that
is 90 acres that the legislature provided money for a few years ago. It's the so-called Port Crosby. There's 5,000 feet on the
Mississippi River.
It's contiguous to St. Paul. So it's
7 minutes, literally, from this door.
To get to a recreation area that includes 90 acres on the Bruce Rebento, area. Mm-hmm. I know Senator Anderson, you've been involved in this stuff, but this
preserve that
89 acres. Well, this is part of the trail that goes through this
park.
And also to the left is what we call Thompson Park. That's a Dakota County park. I think you can see that in West St. Paul. There's about 150 acres there. So we have about a 300-acre regional park, again, 6 minutes from our front door of the Capitol. So it's, we don't look at this as a South St. Paul underpass. And you can see it connects all the way up to the Sibley House. But you can see the map there, too. That kind of... I think that kind of explains the situation. We've got Steve here from Mayor Baughman, who's unable to make it today, but if you needed, I think I've touched on just about everything, unless there's something you guys would like to add.
Yeah, welcome to the committee.
Thank you,
please,
Madam Chair.
Identify yourself, please.
Members of the committee, my name is Stephen King. I'm the city administrator in South St. Paul. With me is Chris Esser, our director of Parks and Recreation. And our mayor does send her regards, but was unfortunately not able to attend. Senator Metzen has done a very good job of outlining the system we're looking at here. We are talking about, when ultimately constructed, a 52-mile regional trail that extends from Hastings to St. Paul and Minneapolis. Of that 52 miles, approximately 8 miles is already constructed, and about six of it has been done in South St. Paul because we've been very aggressive in pursuing that. On the map that we've distributed, you do see the pink marking for 19th Avenue. That is the one remaining barrier in the already constructed trail that blocks accessibility. The pictures tell, I think, the whole story. We've got that as part of our packet. If you look at that, you can see that there's a 19% grade to come from the ravine up over 19th Avenue and then descend on the other side. That's the set of pictures that's included in your packet. What we're proposing to do is, at a cost of $1.4 million, construct an underpass through that land dam. The land dam exists because we had to bring 19th Avenue up out of the ravine because it used to periodically be flooded and washed out. $1.9 million would allow that underpass to be constructed, and then we'd have full accessibility. Our handout does display the variety of multi-jurisdictional facilities that are connected by the existing trail, and they start from the Dodge Nature Center in West St. Paul. And as the Senator mentioned, it does include West St. Paul cities, a county, West St. Paul Park, a county park. It comes into South St. Paul. The regional trail proceeds down to what was called Port Crosby and is now known as Kapoja Landing, the 90 acres on the river, and then proceeds south on an already constructed trail that is in South St. Paul adjacent to the river. Ultimately, that will proceed on through Inver Grove and down to Hastings. We have done the preliminary feasibility study on this project. We're ready to go. It can be activated as early as this summer with the funding.
You can see that this is a major component. This would be the last little section there. It's a little section, but it's for the reasons I mentioned that the
possibility of people crossing that highway wasn't handicapped.
responsibility underneath. This completes it, so I want to be back.
Thank
any
you.
More money on this?
Senator Metzen, will there be any local contribution to the project?
You guys can answer that. Done yes. Some things.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the feasibility study was done in partnership with Dakota County at a cost of $14,000, and this is part of an ongoing expenditure that we've been integrally involved with over the years. We've detailed a number of the different components here. We're roughly at $2 million into local expenditures that have supported the over $12 million that we believe is invested in this regional trail and its components.
Great.
$2 million. So they've come to the plate.
Senator Parisot.
Madam Chair, I just have one question of either Senator Metzen or Mr. King, and that is where does, if on this, if you could identify, where does that trail cross that, did you say county road or a highway? I'm not sure which it is.
Yes.
Can you
point it out on here?
Senator Metzen.
Give us a clue?
Yeah. Well,
I guess it doesn't have a street in there. It's 19th Avenue North, which is okay. Yeah. One of
right.
I'm not sure. It's a county road.
You can see on your map, it's the pink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 19th Avenue, which gets you, you know where the hospital is in South St. Paul?
Divine Redeemer
up there. And
oh, yes, yes.
And you go north, about a mile and a half, and on the right would be the property we're talking about.
Below there, Port Crosby. To the left would be Kaposia Park, which has been a South St. Paul City Park for 100 years.
Ages.
So that's the dividing highway between the Crosby land on the right to the river, Mississippi River, 5,000 feet, and to the left would be the what we call the Kaposia Park, named after the Kaposia.
So it is right at the site that's the site you want to fix.
I know you've been by there, but
it's a critical. Can't wait any longer. We'll go up another 300,000 next year.
Yeah, and we've heard a lot. I mean, we've heard a lot of trail proposals, as you can imagine. But having creating connections between different systems is really a high priority.
This one does, and it,
as you can see, it just wraps all around. It goes wherever. Maybe Senator Taurus Ray could tell me what happens when it gets across the bridge over in the herd area, but I'm sure it goes on and on.
That's right.
So that's that one. And
where does it cross?
We have an email. Right, sir.
Oh, right. And then you have rights now, I'm sure.
Got the next one would be.
You can bike right off that, too.
Senate file 24. This is what they call a
Heritage Park trail system.
This is about.
Not down this part.
Side at Green.
No, really, we drive there.
This is also an initiative of the City of Inverness.
Oh,
they've already spent a lot of money down there already. This is the
extension.
Part of this is the extension of the
same trail I've been
visiting with you about. Quite frankly, the whole project, which we don't expect this.
The state to fund is $4.6 million. That's what it says, the bill says.
We think this is a large part of the, obviously, the city should be doing this because most of it's a park.
Same token, it's the walkway. It's a continuation down to Hastings, Minnesota, I was just talking to you about. So if we can,
this will be about a 3-4 year project. So I'll be very candid. We don't have a lot of money around here, but if we could find a place over $600,000 would be critical thing to connect this
trail.
Eventually, all the way to Hastings. This is after that area I just talked about in the last year. So I'm not coming here today expecting the city to pay for the
park for Inver Grove Heights, but I would like
it's a logical, I believe, situation
where the state can kick in for that. So anything we could get from the state.
Again, this is statewide.
Regional statewide significant
trail.
So that's that one, and it's here, but they've told me that take 3 or 4 or 5 years, so we're not here.
That's correct.
So anything we can do would be very
extension of...
Is it Mr. Carlson? Did you want to say something?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you should have gotten some handouts that walk through the Heritage Village Park. There's one of the first pages in the handout is a map of the city of Emerald Grove Heights. The clover leaf on top of that map is, for a reference point, is 494 and Highway 52, and you can see the park line in the northeast corner of the city, adjacent to the city of South St. Paul. Be happy to stand by and answer any questions.
Like, hopefully, some consideration from this committee and certainly these two projects. There's no further questions on that. I know you're pressed for time, but there's one more issue. It's also on this map.
Senate Bill 2350.
There's an abandoned
railroad highway bridge that
was built in 1894. The Rock Island Swing Bridge, St. Paul Park.
Corps of Engineers ordered it to be taken down.
About $4 or $5 million,
and I think we've got the money set aside for that. But
the county and the city is desirous to do.
First of all, 80% of the bridge is going to be taken down. What we'd like to do, and this is in conjunction with the last two bills I just talked about, take the first 180 or 200 feet of the bridge
that's on the Inver Grove Heights side
and leave that
standing for a.
You can walk off the trail or
walk out here
and get an overview of the river. It's kind of a neat idea that they have. And they, on the Washington side, that all has turned out. We know that.
So does the thing that turns in the middle with the old bridge. That's been turned off.
This one is 9 years for the barges to go through. Mm. We're dictated that we have to knock this down. So we'd like a little help in that area. We're talking about what
it's called a bridge 5600.
I think you might have a
5600 in there.
Is he here?
So those are the kind of the priorities in the list. I'd be happy to be honest with you, in the order I listed them. The project is there. Exciting, and they've got beautiful things to do. We understand that they have to pay
80-90% of that, but if we can help on a trail to make that total connection, that's what I'm looking for
this morning or this afternoon.
Thank you. Excellent. Well, thank you for those presentations. Senator Pariseau.
Madam Chair, Senator Metzen, is there other federal dollars involved in this? You've got, because it's the Mississippi National River Rec Area, and so are there any federal dollars that can be leveraged with something we provide?
Mr. Carlson?
I'll also answer that. I know
they've been booked in there under looking granny, under the rock, but I don't know if it's successful.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the city, the county, and a bunch of other different agencies have been working together to try to figure out how best to preserve Bridge 5600 and who would be the ultimate owner and which different agencies would participate in its day-to-day and month and year-to-year maintenance. There haven't been any formal agreements made yet, but all those agencies, including the National Park Service, have been involved in the conversations and discussion.
But they didn't come with a checkbook.
Not at this point.
Excuse me. We got to have one person at a time talking. Sorry. I know you're all really enthusiastic. We're going to get lost on the tape. Senator Pariseau?
I just said they didn't come with a checkbook, though.
Oh, okay.
The NPS.
So there's no way you can restore it so that it can still swing? Oh, that's no. It's because it's such a neat old artifact, you know?
It's really something. But
yeah.
The toll bridge, the only one in Minnesota up until 99.
I remember.
It charged 75 cents to get over and 75 cents back.
Uh-huh.
Quarter bridge was so messed up.
It's kind of a bargain because you didn't want to sit on that bridge forever now.
Yeah.
That thing rebuilt, that's another issue. But,
but
a lot of people took that as a shortcut.
I've been on it once or twice, I think, but it's it'd be a shame to have it go away completely, just so if you can save
part of it. So if we could keep
part of it. Yeah.
I don't know how many bridges in the
state would have highway underneath the railroad tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Exciting, but if we could have
that going out and, you know, the old time safe and I don't know if they're going to throw fishing lines over it or not, but that could be it. But we've got about four or five groups looking at collaboration, Senator.
Saul and others.
But we could use
certainly
a little help here, too.
All right. Well, we'll see what we can do, and we'll try our best to help you within
thank
the
you,
constraints
kindly.
Of our budget. Thank you very much, good. Senator Metzen. And, you
know, Senator Saxog, he was awake the whole time.
Well, we appreciate your enthusiasm, Senator Metzen, for these projects. What? Yes, I can see that. We don't actually really need to vote on that, but we might as well. I think we should go back real quickly. We do have a quorum present, and let's just adopt Senator Dibble's amendment on Senate File 2436. And he had offered the A1 amendment, the lighting amendment, which is similar to the identical to the one that Senator Pogemiller had with the changes that were incorporated into it. Senator Saxog moves the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
There's no motion fails. Great. I think maybe I'll do what? Well, what are you trying to tell me? Are they ready? No. Scott's not back. Okay, I'm going to do my bill next. That's we're juggling things here. No, I saw their heads up, and I thought you were pointing at Rick Carter and Sheldon.
No, I was
okay, so Senator Saxog, would you please? We're going to do the Senate File 2701 at the end of the agenda. Okay.
Just have to press the button on top, I'm told.
Press the button on top? Got to get it
on the projector.
Gotcha.
Just the light.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you.
Senate
Mr.
File
Chair.
2701.
Thank you. I'll just get started. Computer, you're not in the right one. This bill is a request for an appropriation of. I should let you guys figure this out first. Sorry. I'm trying to talk over you. Great. Okay, we are asking for $800,000 out of bonding proceeds to fund a renovation of the fish habitat display at the Minnesota State Fair. Now, how many of you have been to the you've all been to the DNR building. How many of you have been to the fish habitat building? Okay, good. Very good. Right. Well, so a number of you know exactly what we're talking about here. And it's an old display. It's over 25 years old, and it has some serious issues that need to be taken care of. The display is decaying because of design flaws, and fish tanks are failing and must be replaced. It receives over 800,000 visitors. So it's one of those kind of iconic parts of the state fair to come to the DNR booth and see things about our natural resources and about our fish in Minnesota. And so we have to make sure we take care of it. So that information and that educational experience will be available to all those people all across Minnesota who come to our fair. So I'm going to let our two experts here from the DNR tell you briefly about the project. Dirk Peterson is on my right, and Jennifer Matthews is on my left. And I'll let you introduce yourselves as what your specific role is, please.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. As she introduced me as Dirk Peterson, I'm the Central Region Fisheries Manager. I'm responsible for about a fourth of the state in regards to fisheries issues, but I also have the State Fair as one of my responsibilities, and I'm joined by Jennifer Matthews, our Minocqua Program Supervisor, which is aquatic education. And we're here to provide information about a project to renovate DNR's live fish display at the Minnesota State Fair. I assume each of you have taken the opportunity to see the variety of fish that we have at the State Fair, anything from the prehistoric-looking lake sturgeon to the oddly spoon-billed sort of paddlefish. But these fish are also seen alongside the more common fish like walleye, bluegill, northern pike. And to this point, we feel that the State Fair provides an entry-level educational experience for a lot of people about Minnesota's fishes and their habitats, and it may spur that interest in wider interest in Minnesota citizens toward our natural resources. And hopefully we hope that that will lead to a stewardship ethic within our citizens and by having that entry-level experience. And we all recognize that fishing is a great Minnesota tradition, and about 1.7 million Minnesotans angle, and it's typically a family event that frequently leads to our youngest anglers maybe having the outdoor experience of their life, or one that's hard to believe. And but you know, in a much earlier time, we were a fairly rural population, probably within my own father's time. And it was not that uncommon for Andy Griffith to take Opie down to the lake for a little fishing, and he still does it on reruns quite a bit. We've now become a highly urbanized society, and frequently our children and in our own lives, we're very busy, heavily scheduled, and we have a lot of alternative things to occupy our time, and sometimes we don't even have the opportunity to spend time in the outdoors as much as we'd like, let alone get the chance to go fishing. And the State Fair provides a very special opportunity. There's a reason we call it the Great Minnesota Get-Together, and that comes from the fact that 1.6 million people attend the State Fair, and we estimate that close to one-half of those people, or approximately 800,000 folks, attend go through the DNR building, where the cornerstone of that display is our live fish display. And obviously, these pictures are connoting a little bit older infrastructure, but it is. These tanks that we have at the State Fair were built in 1980. I believe they're the third incarnation of tanks at the DNR building, and it represents an aging infrastructure. But it's an active display, and it provides an opportunity for families to enjoy live fish and to talk about them and to understand what's happening here. But there's the good, the bad, and the ugly. I think the good is that we're holding the tank displays together. But since they were first built in 1980, we've had five tanks decommissioned, and three have failed since 1991. And, we put them together with the classic duct tape and a little bit of shoelace, and we keep them going. But this is kind of the back view. These are plywood frame tanks encased in fiberglass, and they're set up against display windows that are behind this plywood framed facade. And we've run this for over 25 years. And there's some fundamental design flaws that are associated with this. And if you can see here, the panes, the glass panes that you view the fish through, are two panes of glass, one on either side of a wood frame that is sealed with silicone. And throughout the year, as moisture and temperature changes on this facility, you start to get leaks or cracks in the silicone seals, and ultimately a leak develops, or on occasion a tank blows or fails, as you might say. And here's just a little bit of a close-up of some of that the sealant decaying and eliminating. And then we've also had some other issues that come here, is that because these panes are not fully sealed, they can get moisture to build up in them. If you've ever seen one of your own double E windows at home where the seal is broken, you start building moisture inside. The same happens here. And so this horizontal gray pipe you see in the upper left photo is really a nitrogen stream that we are pumping through all the display tanks to minimize the moisture that builds up in there. And we do that during the fair, and that's a retrofit. And so each time we've had to retrofit something to keep this display moving forward, we've had to modify plumbing and everything else, which is connoted by this little spider thing down in the corner here, just trying to make this thing work and continue for the benefit of Minnesota citizens. But we do have a vision for the future, and I think Jennifer's going to share a little bit of that with us.
Since we're tag-teaming here, I'm going to take over on the computer. One image that Dirk didn't touch on was our concrete cement pond. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Jennifer Matthews. I'm the Minocqua coordinator with the Department of Natural Resources. And I'm going to take us through a concept that includes education. A few years back, we had contracted to have some concept drawings created in order to help us visualize what an update might look like. So while the infrastructure is our initial objective, we have an opportunity to capitalize on this captive audience that is often standing in front of these tanks. So this is an opportunity to expand and enhance learning opportunities, and as Dirk points out, move people from just an awareness level to an ownership level. The concept provides more of a naturalized habitat where the fish are grouped by their habitats, creating knowledge about where these fish actually live in their natural habitats, and then also having family-friendly display panels above and below the tanks that help act as a self-guided tour then when people are standing in front of those tanks. And overall, it will enlarge the viewing area, larger tanks top to bottom, within a similar footprint that's existing there now. So from a passive experience looking at these fish in a concrete pond, we'd like to look at something a little more active. This displays the outdoor area, which includes an island in the center of that pond, which helps push the fish out to more of a viewing area on the edge of the pond, but it also helps to shade the fish during those 2 weeks. You all know it gets often pretty hot on the state fairgrounds, and that cement pond gets hot as well. So this is another opportunity to, again, look at fish in more of a naturalized habitat, help us talk about habitat as we talk about fish identification and the diversity of fish within Minnesota. So as another concept of this, it creates an identified area for those teachable moments. Our Minocqua staff are out on the grounds every day during the state fair giving seminars on hands-on activities like casting, knot tying, and then observation through fish identification and fish filleting. So this concept creates an area to draw those people to those activities, creating just beyond just that awareness experience to an empowerment where citizens feel that they can create an independence believing that they can do these activities on their own. I know your time is short here, so we just want to cover quickly then. The objectives of today is that we're just showing a concept that would help to improve the displays of the fish habitat areas within the state fair, also looking at the health of the fish while we have them displayed out there. And as an added improvement, and I think the most important improvement, is obviously the educational experiences that could happen there. This display is not just a display. It's the department's vision for Minnesota citizens to embrace and enhance an experience, creating empowerment through increased knowledge, skills, and creating ownership, stimulating interest with families fishing, empowerment through skills that creates an independence, and finally a citizenry that's active in natural resources and has a stewardship ethic. And both Dirk and I will be open for questions.
Any questions to the committee? Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Do the fish in that habitat display there year-round, and they're maintained as such?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, no, they're there for about 10 days. The balance of the time we have holding ponds at the St. Paul Hatchery where we keep them. Some are actively collected just prior to the fair.
Okay. Follow-up, Mr. Chair. As you expand this display, and I really like your concept and design, are you going to expand the educational opportunities as well beyond just the 10 days?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, yeah, absolutely. That's we already do education out there. This would increase that opportunity to be more impactful because, as we talk about often, is the importance of habitat in association with the diversity of fish. So having something that's more visually appealing in that regards would help to enhance that.
Mr. Chair and Senator Chaudhary, are you talking about trying to extend its usage beyond the 10 days of the fair also?
Yeah.
You know, it would be not, I don't know if there's a way to do that, but with this kind, type of investment and this type of display, it would be worth it.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhary, at this point we haven't talked about that potential, only because the State Fair is a 10-day event, and I guess we have not talked about doing that. I think that's a State Fair Board probably decision.
Mr. Chair, I think they'll decide based on your proposals.
Yeah.
So maybe that could be something the DNR could start considering. Given the level of investment, it could really expand. And have you also considered having in the display or some part of the display fishing, maybe demonstrations or some of these? Sometimes these trade shows have trout ponds that are fun for kids to catch fish there. Have you thought about doing a little bit of that?
Madam Chair. I'm sorry. Thanks, Dirk. Madam Chair, Senator.
Yeah, you can address him.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, yes.
Mr. Chair. Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Chaudhary. We have looked at different opportunities. We do have a trout angler that does fly fishing demonstrations actually on the pond. It is illegal to go fishing in this pond for many reasons, but the logistics of doing that would expand exponentially on the availability to do that. We have talked to other states that have similar situations where they allow fishing to happen. There are many logistics, and they feel that potentially the overall experience isn't enhanced.
You know, Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhary, you're just getting me thinking here. I think this is creative thinking, and I appreciate that. Before the fishing opener, you know, something we talk a lot in our committee about how to get more children into outdoor activities, and in particular hunting and fishing, the numbers are declining. And I'm thinking about city kids, you know, having a chance, you know, in April before the fishing opener to have some kind of a let's go fishing type event in the city would be just an awesome experience. We have in Como Lake, which is real close to the State Fair, every April we have a water festival, and there's little activities where children can learn how to fish right there, and they have fishing poles and people to help them, you know, put some bait on, et cetera. And it really helps to generate a lot of interest. I mean, having something like that at least once during the year is a kind of a fun idea.
Mr. Chair, these sportsman shows have trout pond right there. They have
portable.
You can contract with anyone who does that, and there's certainly the space there, having visited to add that. So you could do a lot in getting kids interested in and other people interested in fishing.
Senator,
last
Chaudhary.
Question.
I thought you were going to bring up ice fishing.
I was asking about how we could extend it beyond the 10 days.
Yeah.
But last question, Mr. Chair, is kind of the mainstay of my image of this display is these logs. What do you call them? These pier type.
On the outside pond you're talking?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is there a plan in your engineering or architects to save them, reuse them in your new display, or utilize them for some purpose, just to maintain the historical nature of the display?
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhary, we had not discussed that specifically, but we can certainly incorporate that into future plans.
And if not, I'll buy them from you.
We'll see him on cable TV pretty soon.
Yeah.
Other questions?
All right. Well,
if
thank
not,
you so
thank
much.
You very much.
Thank you for your attention. I think Senator Carlson, do you want to start with Senator Carlson?
Sure. Senator Carlson, Senate File 751.
It isn't on. Oh, there it is. There it is. It's on the list.
Thank you.
Yes.
Senator Carlson, the Bloomington Cedar Avenue Bridge removal and replacement.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you very much for hearing our request here. We have Senate File 751, which entails a $2 million request for funds to reconnect Dakota County and Hennepin County with the old Cedar Avenue Bridge. This is a wonderful bridge that was in service for most of the 20th century. And it has been deteriorated and now closed. And this is something that's near my home, and I was a very avid user of it with bicycles. And it's been used by a lot of other groups. And what I've done is I have three testifiers here that will give you their perspectives. I have Mr. Dave Pramman, who is a cyclist, Mr. Steve Weston, who is from the Minnesota River Valley Audubon chapter, and Mr. Steve Elkins, who is on the Bloomington City Council. And I'll ask Mr. Pramman to give his perspective first.
Well, thank you, committee and chairman. My name is Dave Pramman. I'm a resident of the west side of Burnsville. I've lived there for 27 years, and I work up, I'm an air traffic controller and manager up at the airport control tower in Minneapolis. I've commuted for almost all those years 2 to 5 times a week, depending on the weather, and I took this bridge. It was a real direct route into Bloomington, and it connected with a lot of the suggested bike paths that Egan and Burnsville and Bloomington have set up. It was a real logical connection. About 5 or 6 years ago, the bridge was condemned, and it's been shut down ever since. Now, right now, there's a stretch of the Minnesota River, and it's kind of ironic because historically, Minnesota has led the nation with being bicycle-friendly, with rail trails and good bicycle routes, the Twin Cities especially so. But there's a 15-mile stretch of river all the way from 494 on the east side. If you go west, you have to go all the way to the old Bloomington Ferry Bridge crossing where you can legally or logically cross on a bicycle. You can't cross in that area any other way. That would be, just to give you some perspective, if you went all the way between Minneapolis and St. Paul, if you went from where the Mississippi rivers come together all the way upstream to Fridley, if you had no, that's 15 miles there too, if you had no stretch to get across the river on a bicycle legally, I mean, that's craziness. And now you have to go way to the east, either 494 or the Mendota Bridge, or like I said, way to the west, almost to Eden Prairie and Shakopee to get across on the old ferry bridge. So anyway, we really need that link completed and reestablished, and hopefully we can get some money to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Now we'll have Mr. Steve Weston from the Audubon chapter.
Hi, I'm Steve Weston, Minnesota Audubon, Minnesota River Valley Audubon chapter. I want to talk to the importance of this bridge in terms of the birding community. This was the premier location to go to for birders, for new birders. There is no other location like it in the metro area. By walking across the bridge, you are above the birds, and you can see birds that you otherwise cannot find because they're hidden in the marsh, and they're totally oblivious to you standing there looking right straight down on them. So if there is any location that if somebody came to me and said, hi, I'm new to the Twin Cities, where do I go to bird, that is the place that I would send them to. It is no longer because the bridge is not open. You have a variety of habitat there, not just the marshes and the lake that you are overlooking, but you've got the forests and some grasslands right nearby, so you get a tremendous variety of different kinds of birding, changes during the season, accessibility is great. You do not have another area that is wheelchair accessible for birding like that in the city. It's unique.
Thank you.
And now I'm going to make one comment, or actually a double comment here, about the hikers who also have used that area and the fishermen. I have not gone across that bridge at any time, I believe, when there has not been fishermen on that bridge. So it has a multi-use. And now what we're going to do is hear from Mr. Steve Elkins. He's from the Bloomington City Council.
Thank you. Mr. Elkins. Mm-hmm. Just a few points. I know we're trying to keep this brisk this afternoon.
Mr. Elkins, Counselor, could you just identify yourself for the tape?
Oh, sure. Steve Elkins, Bloomington City Council.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The break in the bridge right now represents a major break in the Minnesota Valley River Trail, which runs through this corridor. So it's the most important break right now in the trail in the region. It is on the Minnesota Parks and Trails Council list of recommended trail projects. And perhaps most importantly, the city applied for and received a federal transportation enhancement grant to replace the bridge in a competitive grant solicitation a few years ago. The project is actually programmed in the Metro Region's Transportation Improvement Program for the 2009-2010 program cycle, which means that the federal money that we have, $1 million grant, is available to be spent as soon as the beginning of the next fiscal year this summer. If we're not able to complete the rest of the funding, then that money will eventually sunset within a few years and go back into the pool. So there is a certain amount of urgency to completing the funding for this project. And, you know, the other thing I know you're interested in is that, yes, the city is prepared to make a significant investment in this project as well. If the bridge just continues to rust and fall into the lake, we're the ones who are on the hook to have it replaced. It is was coated with red lead when it was originally built. All of that is just flaking into the lake right now, so there is also some urgency to the project from an environmental point of view as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any questions?
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is probably pretty obvious, but the bill doesn't really state it. You're asking the bridge to be reinvented for recreational use, not for transportation. Do I understand that right, or will cars also be going over this bridge?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, it is just for recreational use. At this point, there still may be some issues that relate to the airport, but we think that that has been set aside. It is just for recreational use. And the final decision on exactly what will be done to it has yet to be made because there's still some engineering discussions that are going on.
I know that MnDOT is interested in being able to use it for maintenance vehicles to get access to the new Cedar Avenue Bridge. So I think it would probably be built strong enough to accept at least some vehicular traffic.
Other questions? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next, we're going to take Senator Larson. Senate File 2510. Senator, it's all yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate the opportunity to come before this committee for the very first time. Appreciate that. Senate File 2510 is a bonding request in the amount of $225,000 for the Minnesota River Watershed District to acquire land as well as design and construct improvements for a dredge material site. And these sites are necessary per the Army Corps of Engineers. And this is an important improvement, as we, of course, know that our waterway system is vital to keeping our river up, as well as the commerce that is provided on our river system. I know that your time is short, and so I'm going to very quickly turn this over to the experts here, and I want to introduce the guests that I have with me today. And to my right is Len Kramer, the president of the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District, and to his right, Terry Schwalbe, the administrator of the district. Mr. Kramer will give us some comments related to the need for the project and the nature of the project and how the funds will be used. And Mr. Schwalbe is here to help answer questions if necessary. Again, we very much appreciate the time of the committee and would turn it over to Mr. Kramer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Senator indicated the
Mr.
enormous...
Kramer, would you identify yourself for the tape?
Yes. Not,
I know yours, but...
Thank you. Yeah. I'm Len Kramer, the president of the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District.
Thank you.
And the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District is a very small area, 80 square miles, at the bottom of a 15,000 square mile Minnesota River Watershed. One of the things that we're responsible for, in addition to maintaining and preserving some of the resources in that district, is maintaining or providing dredge spoil disposal sites for the federal navigation project, which extends from the Mississippi River to Port Shakopee. The Corps does the dredging, and we have to acquire the sites and maintain the sites and dispose of the dredged material. We're here asking the state of Minnesota for assistance because the state of Minnesota, for a couple reasons. One of them is the state of Minnesota is a significant beneficiary of this federal navigation project. Approximately 150 million bushels of grain are shipped to market from this from Port Shakopee every year. So the agricultural industry in the state of Minnesota benefits significantly from this low-cost form of transportation. Another of the reasons that we're here is that for the last 60 years, the local stakeholders in this area have paid for all of the costs of disposing of this material, but we're seeing significant increases in material that are tributary to our watershed from the upstream watershed. And we have absolutely no control over what happens there. So we currently have 250,000 tons of sediment that are tributary to the upstream end of our watershed every year. About 20 to 40% of that material is deposited in our river channel and in our floodplain lakes. And costs of getting rid of that material and maintaining that channel are getting higher. The costs of acquiring dredge spoil sites are getting higher. And so we're asking for the state of Minnesota to be a partner with us in this, being the local sponsor for this federal project. Like I said, for the last 60 years, the local people have paid all of the costs. The state of Minnesota does provide financial assistance to several of the other ports in the state of Minnesota, the Port of Minneapolis, the Port of St. Paul, the Port of Winona, and the Port of Duluth. And so we're asking the state to participate with us in the maintenance of this dredge channel to the port of Shakopee. And if there's any questions, we'd be pleased to answer them.
All right. Thank you so much. Other questions? Just a second. All right. Senator Larson, anything else?
I really don't have much more to wrap up with other than we, again, appreciate the time of the committee. We understand you have a busy schedule and appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, and
thank
we'll
you.
Do our best.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time, and thanks for being here. All right. Senator Koch, are you ready?
Yes. Got a handout so someone could come and grab it.
Yes, that sounds good. I'm sorry, Scott. Hang on. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Okay.
Well,
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing our bill today. With me today is Jeff O'Neill. He's the city administrator for the city of Monticello, and Mark Matthijs. He is with Wright County Parks Department. And our bill, the third year that we've been working on this bill. This is the Bertram Chain of Lakes Regional Park. It is in the Monticello Township. It's a 1,200-acre plot of land that is currently owned by the YMCA, and they operate a camp there. Which is just a couple of kind of interesting things about this. This is four lakes, 1,200 acres, and there's not There's not a house, there's not a cabin on the lake. So it's a very, it's just this beautiful, pristine kind of rarity in this state. And the money that we're coming in with, just so you know, is we're looking for $8 million, but the city and the county will both be also matching with $8 million each. So this is one-third of the project, with two-thirds of the project being covered by local. And also, this is simply for land acquisition. The rest of the operating costs, any improvements to the park, will all be covered by local city and county officials. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the experts. Many of you have been out to visit. We appreciate that. And also, this might be familiar. This was the LCCMR heard this proposal as well and has been very favorable to it. The LCCMR has heard it. The people have visited with capital investment, and so we'll go ahead, Mark.
Again, good afternoon. My name is Mark Tyson, Parks Administrator for Wright County, and with me today is Jeff O'Neill, City Administrator for the City of Monticello, and would like to thank you for hearing our testimony on why the Bertram Chain of Lakes would be a great addition to your bonding proposal. The project is in Wright County, adjacent to the City of Monticello. We're proposing acquisition of the Bertram Chain of Lakes, which is currently owned by the YMCA of Minneapolis. The property is highlighted by four completely undeveloped lakes with over 6 miles of shoreline, 1,615 acres of forest lands, and 245 acres of mixed vegetation. With the average depth of the four lakes being 38 feet, they hold excellent game fish populations for fishing where people live close to. As far as regionally significant, we're not within the Metro Met Council, so our funding sources are different. The property is located just on the west side of Monticello, and it's 25 miles from St. Cloud and 12 miles from the Hennepin County line. It's easily accessible off I-94 and State Highway 25 that connects Buffalo 7 miles to the south and the city of Big Lake and Sherburne County 3 miles to the north. So we're right in that growth corridor between St. Cloud and Monticello, which makes our area not only prone to urban sprawl development, but also a great location for a regional park just outside the metro area. Wright County is experiencing fast population growth, with over 25,000 people in the last 6 years moving to Wright County. The handout that we gave you, there is a recreational site plan, so you can see kind of what could be there and what we have plans for, as well as some photos of the natural resources we are trying to protect. The budget for the project, our acquisition, we have talked with the YMCA, and we have a handshake deal, or basically a purchase agreement, waiting to be signed by each party for $20.5 million. We are in recommendation from the LCCMR for $1 million in funding, and we appreciate that. We are requesting $8 million in state bonding for our project, with $5.75 million for the acquisition coming from the city and $5.75 million coming from the county. All operations and maintenance would be paid for by the city and county's operations, and capital costs to raise our cost share up to that $8 million apiece, because we'll be looking at putting in facilities and developing facilities like that. Our goal is to provide a regionally significant park and some outstanding natural resources within that growth corridor from St. Cloud to the Twin Cities. And I guess I don't want to take up a lot of your time, because you're very busy. We'll open it up for questions or not, or Jeff has a few things to say.
Thanks, Mark. Jeff O'Neill, City Administrator for Monticello. Just want to say a few things following up on what Mark said. This property is about a 9-iron away from the freeway, and it has already have utilities very close to it. It has been held off from development for a number of years because the YMCA purchased it 50 years ago, and the area started to develop around it. So over that time period, development pressure has built and built and built, and yet at the same time, the property has been maintained virtually in a pristine condition. So we are at a point in time where the YMCA is interested in selling, and they were gracious enough to offer it to the local governments first before they were going to, you know, cash in on their investment. They could take the money from the sale to developers and put it into other programs in their system. But they worked very closely with us to create a collaboration with the county, with the city, and with themselves to work with us on price. In the meantime, our proposal with them calls for them continuing to allow to operate there a day camp like they have historically, yet get the benefit of having a park maintained by the county and by the city. So we're really teaming up with them to continue a tradition of great community service and then extending into the future with local jurisdictions working together to preserve it and operate over time. So county would be doing the passive recreation maintenance, the trails, the water use, so on. The city would have ball fields that we would develop in some out-of-the-way portion of the land that's currently farmland. So we think it's a great opportunity for YMCA, the city, and the county to team up. And since it's right in the central growth corridor of the state and it's going to attract people from all over the state, it's right on the bridge connecting Sherburne County to Wright County across the Mississippi. We think it's poised perfectly for preservation at this time. So that's our pitch. We think it's a great project for the area and for the state. And we thank you very much for considering it and are open to questions.
Great. Thank you very much. Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, I happen to know where this is because I have kids and up in that country, Big Lake. But the new train is coming through Big Lake. Mm-hmm.
A little further to the north.
I don't know how many thousand new homes probably will be built up there. You've got to have some place for the people, kids to go. Well, I think it's a win-win. I've always puzzled why somebody didn't, developer didn't come in and grab that piece of property and do it. So.
And Madam Chair and Senator Vickerman, thank you for your kind words and your point. This all just to kind of highlight the YMCA portion of this. This would be operated out of the north. It's operated currently out of the Northwest YMCA. So we're talking Brooklyn Park, Golden Valley, Plymouth, New Hope. That entire area is we'll be servicing that area with these programs. But they're also going to expand their programs in the area. They haven't had a lot of. They've done some things with the city of Monticello and the high school there with some after school programs. But they're really looking forward with this. To expanding their programs to the local area, Buffalo, Monticello, St. Michael, and further west. So it's kind of an exciting opportunity to kind of bring those two areas together, and I think they have some really good ideas with that.
So this would be a regional, public regional park, but you'd work in a partnership with the YMCA? Maybe you said that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the city and the county would maintain the park uses. Mm-hmm. The YMCA would retain approximately 20 acres for their day camp. Presently, that's about all the land they use on that right now for their day camp. It's 1,200 acres. They only use a portion of it for their actual activities. They would continue to use their day camp, and then they would probably program out of there. But then they'd have the beach taken care of by the county. They'd have all the trails maintained. And we'd provide security, and all those things could complement what the YMCA would be traditionally doing. Right now, they don't really use all that elbow room that they have there. They don't need it all, but they've acquired it over time, obviously, potentially for the idea for selling for the future and to a developer. But that's why we think it's important to step in now.
Okay, so how much of the land area would you actually develop beyond what's already developed?
We would be looking at keeping most of that area in the natural resources. We're looking at using a 75% to 80% kept natural, while the other ones, our facilities would be developed in least impact to the resources.
Okay. And would there be camping, overnight camping there?
Our task force has planned overnight camping. I'm supposed to say Madam Chair, sorry. Our task force has planned for overnight camping, athletic field uses for regional ball field complex, fishing piers, trail use, non-motorized, of course, and fishing. And we don't have any hunting programmed into our component at this time.
And you said there's a beach, so there is swimming.
There would
be lake.
Swimming, beach, nature observation, environmental education. And that's one of the partnerships with the YMCA that we work towards is them helping us program for environmental education for the youth in that area.
And how clean is the water? How clear is it?
Madam Chair, it's beautiful. It hasn't even been hardly fished. They've allowed very limited fishing on the lake even. So it's full of fish, and the quality, I think, is excellent. But
the water quality, it's nice, clear lakes at
like
this
time. You've done Secchi Disc?
Secchi Disc, I don't have the readings for the Secchi Disc right off top.
They're glacial lakes.
It's spring-fed.
The average depth on the one 30, lake is
38 feet.
38 feet.
And there is a local scuba diving people that do scuba dive, so it's pretty, pretty cool.
Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, I just wanted members to take a look at this handout. What's more precious than those little youngsters going through the woods?
Through their packs.
Ramping me to know that that's what they have to do. That's more precious than any
country. So I'm thinking about this Lake Vermilion State Park, and someone suggested to me think about the cost of that lake land. That lakeshore land versus the metro area land, and I'm curious what's the square, what's the cost per mile or square foot of lakeshore? Can you give me a breakdown for the cost?
49 divided by 6.
Well, it's 6 miles of lakeshore.
Okay.
$20 million.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Yeah. All right. Because the Vermilion proposal is 5 or 6 miles of lakeshore. Mm-hmm. It's not the whole lake, but. And it's, we don't know exactly the cost, but it's
that's
at least that much, probably more, possibly.
We should also note that the price that the jurisdictions were willing to pay was based on hard study done by appraiser that was brought in. So this was not a number that was brought out of the sky, that we worked hard based off the best data that we had available. So that's, I think, worth noting.
Well, I remember when we talked about this in the LCCMR, and there was a lot of support for this, but we just couldn't come up with all that much money. So we'll do our best to try to help you in the bonding bill. So thank you very much. If there's no more questions.
Thank you very much, Senator Anderson.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yes? You're on. Yeah.
Well, Madam Chair, as everybody's transitioning here, I just want to thank you guys for hearing our proposal. This is for Camp Ojikita, and that's in Chisago City in Chisago County, and it's on Green Lake. We didn't make any of the tours because this property just recently became available. There's two times that developers have tried to purchase the property, and this also was an old camp. It was a Campfire Girl camp, and it's under 80 acres, but there's a half-mile frontage on Green Lake. And so Chisago County, every year they have a fifth grade. They take them to a water festival, and for a number of years it was held at this camp, and so I've been there a number of times, and it's just a wonderful, pristine piece of old growth forest and lake frontage that's so close to the metro, but much like the Wright County project. But I have with me today Chisago City Administrator John Peckman, who will be kind of doing the details, and then Gene Miller from the Save. There's a organization, I believe it's Former Campfire Girls, that spent many years at the camp, and they would like to see it preserved. So with that, I would like to turn it over to John.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Peckman. I'm the city administrator for Chisago City. And you should have received a handout. I think they're going around now. I see some familiar faces. We've been at this for about 3 years. Senator Olsen told you the property was under contract with two developers, and recently, with financing conditions being what they are, has become available into the city. We have formed a partnership now with the Trust for Public Land, or TPL. The city, unlike the LCCMR presentation we gave this fall, has stepped forward and committed $1 million to the purchase of the property. We do have the property under contract, the TPL does, with Campfire, to be closed on, hopefully, if the funding comes through by December 08. So we do have a lot of those pieces in place that we did not have. But I'd like to quickly just run through. Again, just location-wise, where the camp is in relation to St. Paul, about 35 miles north of St. Paul. It is located on Green Lake. Green Lake is the largest lake in Chisago County at 1,714 acres. The site itself is
70 acres. There's over 3,000 feet of shoreline. The land has a lot of mature oaks, wetlands, cranberry bogs, natural bay area, trail system, and large lodges. Some of the natural elements of the site, the slide on page 2, the second one, these are actual photos that were taken from campers at Camp Ojikita. You can see the diverse biology there, as well as wildlife, including some fern growth and some oak growth that we've talked about. Next page, on page 3, speaks a little bit to the amenities on the site. There's a classroom on site. The DNR has used it for the Water Resource Festival they hold throughout the county. It's educational classrooms. A beach area would be restored. The city would maintain the property. The beach in the county right now with lifeguards. With lifeguards at this facility and make improvements there. Space up for more public use. Hiking trail system. And then history, I did include some testimonials. I don't think I need to read those. You can certainly go through those. But we've been flooded with the 2.5 years we've been working on this camp. I have testimonials from campfire people that use the camp, people that have been to the camp. As far away as Italy and Hawaii, we've received emails of people that in some way, shape, or form this camp has meant something to them over history. And, we have Jeannie Miller here. She is a resident of Chicago now. She moved to the area largely because of her experience with Camp Fire. She's been a camper, but a counselor there and now lives near the site. And she is one of the members of the Camp Preservation Society.
All right, welcome to the committee. Go ahead, please. Go ahead, please. Yeah, just state your name for us.
Jean Miller. I'm a resident, as John said, of Chisago City. I grew up in St. Paul, and it was at Camp Ojikita where I learned how to swim. I learned how to appreciate the environment and to protect it, and also how to start a campfire and to cook a meal over that. Experiences that ordinarily city kids don't have that much opportunity to do. Right now, as John said too, I also live just north of the camp, and members of my little community have been lucky enough to be able to use that property to hike on and just spend time through the graciousness of campfire. I also am a member of the Ojikita Preservation Society. When this property first came on the market, this committee was formed, and just using email, we were able in a very short period of time to raise over $80,000 to help support the purchase effort. We are now organized. We have never really totally given up, and we are willing to continue our efforts to raise money, hopefully in a broader way, to be a partner with Chisago City and with TPL in order to acquire this really precious property for use but for the citizens of the Chisago Lakes area. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Senator Olsen, do you have a dollar amount that you're requesting?
Madam Chair, $1.4 million.
Madam Chair, do you need a motion to put that in there, or can you just?
No, I don't think we need a motion on that, but thank you. Yeah, we'll just incorporate that into this, and we're not voting on the specific bills. We're going to have a committee package that we're going to recommend to Senator Langseth, and we'll just make a list.
Madam Chair, is this Senator one Vickerman. We visited? I think we visited a Girl Scout. Our girl, did we go out
there? This committee? LCCMR did? Yeah, there was an LCCMR. I didn't go on that one.
I didn't remember the name, but I saw that picture.
I bet you did, yeah. And it's a beautiful area. Yeah, so there will be, what's the total cost?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we have negotiated a price less than the appraised value at $3.8 million total purchase price. Mm-hmm. The city of Chisago has committed $1 million. TPL has committed $500,000 towards the purchase, and then we are seeking to fund the rest through bonding appropriations and other DNR state grants if possible.
Okay, excellent. Well, I'm glad you're keeping the name. Did you say where the name came from, Ojikita?
Ojikita is an Ojibwe word that stands for fair and lovely waters. That's what it means, so it's
nice.
Very fitting. If you've been to the site, you would agree.
That's great. All right, thank you so much. Are there any other questions? Not thank you so much, and we'll do our best to help in the bonding bill.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, I know you have a lot of great projects to go through, and I appreciate you listening to our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you for being here today. All right, next we've got Senator Dibble's bill. I think Senator Dibble is here, yes. Now, are you having other testifiers as well as Mr. Carmody?
Yes, Madam Chair, Mr. Carmody is here as well.
And Mr. Sheldon Strom, are they going to speak too? Senator Dibble, I'll let you decide.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Start your committee, and I think I'm wrapping up.
You are.
All right. To bookend your committee.
You got your money's worth from us. Right.
So I got to do lots of stuff in between. Madam Chair, I'm here to offer Senate file number 2358, and I have an A1 delete all amendment, Madam Chair.
We have that. I think everyone has that in front of them.
Madam Chair, I need to make a few oral amendments to the A1, if I may. I think where there's a blank appropriation on line 1.32, we want to put in $10
million. Okay.
Which is spring eternal, Madam Chair. And then on line 2.8, we can just strike the first few words there, for up to, then the blank appropriation. So it just reads to pay part of the.
Or to pay part of. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then on line 2.12, rather than talking about the utilities conservation improvement spending requirement, can we change the word spending requirement to savings goal?
Under, okay, mm-hmm. So strike spending requirement.
And insert savings goal. Mm-hmm. And then there's just a little typo on 2.23. Form should read from.
What line?
2.23.
Oh, gotcha. Mm-hmm.
And then on line 2.26, again, spending requirement should be deleted
savings.
And savings goal inserted.
All right.
And then on line 3.17, again, we'll put $10 million in.
Is that the same? No, that's an additional $10
million.
That's the same $10
million. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Let's incorporate those. I guess we should this is kind of a funny process, but since we have a document in front of us, Senator Saxhaw, could you move those amendments?
Move the A1 amendment, Madam
All
Chair.
In favor, say or.
Move the A1 with
those changes incorporated in it to get that in front of us. On that, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. All right, Senator Dibble.
All right, Madam Chair, I'll be very brief and then leave the bulk of the time for my witnesses. Craig Johnson was here. I'll just mention him from the League of Minnesota Cities. League of Minnesota Cities is in support of this bill as well. Yeah, I think he's left. Madam Chair, this bill has two parts. The first part. Really has to do with state bonding policy with respect to state buildings, and I'll just mention that very quickly. It allows for right now in state policy for state buildings, we require that they take a look at. We have a new state building code with energy efficiency environmental standards. We extend that. That's for new construction. We extend those provisions for. Major renovations in this language, and we give a definition to what a major renovation is. So it establishes that ongoing new policy for state buildings that are built with bond proceeds. The second part of the bill establishes a green bonds program, and the purpose of those bonds is to make loans to local units of government to pay for their incremental costs. Those costs over and above what they would normally be spending in order to use energy efficient construction. Those would be grants, Madam Chair, not loans. Getting my bills confused. And there are standards set forth, what those elements could include and would require. And this is as a focus because, Madam Chair, later you're hearing another bill of mine that deals with the more short-term payoff types of financing that we can do for local units of government. This would be focused on more major sorts of renovations and improvements to public buildings at the local level that would have a payoff that would be 10 years or greater. Additionally, utilities, of course, we had the the great efficiency bill from last year, and utilities are going to be very involved in helping finance and helping put resources in place to assist with these sorts of efficiencies. So we make sure that units of government, local units of government for public buildings are working with utilities to take advantage of their conservation improvement programs so that utilities can involve some of their resources, some of their capital. So we make sure that that's the first money in, and the proceeds that come from these bond monies would be the second or last money in. With that, Madam Chair, I will introduce Rick Carter, who served on the Climate Change Advisory Group, of which we've heard so much about, to speak about the recommendations that come from that group and the level of benefit we get in energy savings and CO2 emissions in the building sector. And we also have Rick Carmody, who's been very, very involved in, or excuse me, John Carmody, who's been very involved in developing the sustainability guidelines that we have in Minnesota.
Great. All right. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Who's first?
Thank you very much. I'm John Carmody. I'm the director of the Center for Sustainable Building Research at the University of Minnesota. And our group are the ones who led the development of the Minnesota Sustainable Design Guidelines that are now required since 2004 on all state-bonded projects. I was also on one of the working groups with the Climate Change Advisory Group. Very briefly, the guidelines that were put in place since 2004 have been applied to 50 state projects. 3.7 million square feet of space has been impacted, and the projected cost savings to the state are $1.67 million per year and 47,000 tons of CO2 savings per year. So it's been very successful so far. However, it only addresses new buildings. This bill expands that to major renovations, which we all agree is a very positive and necessary thing if we're going to meet the energy and carbon goals that we need to meet. And our team is available, I believe, with current funding to develop the renovation version of the guidelines by February 2009, as this bill specifies.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rick Carter. I'm an architect, and I've also worked with John over the last few years in developing the guidelines for state-bonded buildings. And I just want to reiterate that what John said, we think that's a very good idea. We go through this process after each bonding bill of trying to go through and determine which projects are new buildings versus renovations and additions, and it's kind of painful to know that those projects aren't going through the same rigorous process. And I also wanted to touch briefly on the green bonding. This would be for local units of government that aren't required necessarily to do the green guidelines, but they're many of them are trying to do the right thing, and this would really fund the pieces that are the hardest, the upfront process pieces, things like energy modeling, commissioning, additional design resources to use sets of guidelines, and then also the investments in the building itself. As the senator mentioned, the parts that are longer-term paybacks that make good sense, but if you don't have a little bit of extra money up front, they're hard to do. So we think both of these things are a good idea, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you. That was very succinct. Mr. Carmody, you mentioned the savings that I think you said either the energy or the cost savings. I didn't quite catch it. It was very quick. Of the sustainable guidelines since they've been passed, I think that's what was your number?
Right, right. According to our estimates, of course, when the project was passed in 2004, that meant any building after that had to comply with the guidelines. And it takes so long to design and build a building that some of them are just coming online now. So based on the design, we project $1.67 million in cost savings, energy cost savings per year. And then I don't have the actual energy number in BTUs for you, but that translates into 47,000 tons of CO2 per year.
47,000?
47,000 tons is the number I have here.
And that will be for the buildings in which it's already been incorporated?
Yeah, that's just what we've done so far on the 50 projects that have been designed in the last 3 years.
50 projects. So I wonder if we could get some kind of an estimate on the new bonding bill. I mean, what that's going to entail. Of course, when we pass this and include it in the renovation, it'll be a lot more than it would have been with just new buildings.
I could actually address that, Madam Chair and members of the committee. We're just, as some of you now know, as members of the advisory group, just looking at the draft report that came out several days ago. They've actually quantified within the RCI section under the recent actions this line item, projecting it through 2025 for the new buildings, and it's a pretty impressive number. So if we could ask, the people conducting that exercise to add a proposed component to measure what it would do if we added existing projects to that, we could possibly get some actual numbers.
Well, we're talking about energy cost savings for state buildings or state bonded buildings.
Bonded.
So in any case, direct operational cost savings to units of government around the state. And
absolutely.
So we could even translate it into dollars, perhaps, into how much. No, you said how much dollars it is. It's really remarkable. And so I think we really need to brag a lot about that and make sure that people understand how much it actually saves all of us money to do this, to incorporate these programs up front, this energy efficiency, these requirements up front in the building process. So I'm not sure. Maybe the bonding committee is well aware of this, but I really don't know. I'm not on the committee. I don't know if they talk about it that much, but I think it's pretty amazing. I have an amendment that I want to pass out that relates to this. This is, and I've had conversations with all of you about this. I've been trying to figure out how we can get our state buildings to put renewable energy into their projects as well, because we've actually had laws on the books for years that require state agencies to look to consider doing renewable energy in their planning, but it just isn't happening. And so what we want to do is take some language that was basically recommended by the governor's climate change advisory group, the RCI, which is the one, the residential, commercial, industrial, the kind of the building component that Rick Carter served on. This kind of takes their proposal, and I had it drafted by Peter Watson, and it's not, that's why it's in this format. We haven't had a chance to get it in amendment form. But basically, this would be kind of a start that would require, it would put a little more teeth into existing law and require that state agencies have to consider meeting at least 2% of their energy needs from on-site renewable energy, from wind or solar, meaning solar electric or solar hot water. And we've had some tests. We had a really good hearing in this division, or in Senator Kubley's division, about solar and what we can do in Minnesota right now to save a lot of money and energy costs. And so I think, again, this would be really good business for the state, a really good business practice, because if we could incorporate this up front and start putting this into the planning process so that we can pay for some of those upfront improvements, then we're going to have a lot of savings in energy usage and dollars, operation dollars, over the next 10 and 20 years. Because once these systems are paid for, you have enormous cost savings to the state. So I talked to Senator Dibble about incorporating this into the bill and would like the committee to do that. So is there anything else you want to say about this idea?
Sure, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Just a couple of quick things. The 2% is actually what the RCI Technical Working Group recommended. It's RCI 9, if you want to know more information. There's a two-page description. It was recommended to require 2% of the energy used by state-funded buildings to be on-site renewable, and that was passed unanimously by the advisory group. So 2%, there's some pretty good logic to that number. It keeps it down at a point where you could consider things like solar hot water heat. It keeps the paybacks to a reasonable amount, and it's a great starting point.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe this. I mean, I kind of was wanting to do a bill that would say that we have to do 10% of our buildings every year for the next 10 years, and that's pretty ambitious. So I think this is a realistic place to start, And if we can incorporate these ideas into the buildings that are being designed right now and show that it works and show that it'll actually save the state money, then I think 2 years from now when we do our next bonding bill, there'll be more interest in incorporating these ideas where they're feasible. Great. Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, I'm for it.
Thank you.
I was just going to say, though, Madam Chair, if I may, and we've had this conversation before, I think we technically, you know, consider solar and wind on-site distributed generation to be generation, but I think of it more as an efficiency measure, even though it's not technically an efficiency measure. You know, it's not reducing the amount of electricity that's coming from distant baseload source, but it is reducing. But it is doing that in effect. So I mean, it's not doing the sort of passive sorts of things, the different changes to the systems or the windows or that sort of thing. But it is have the same net effect.
Absolutely, Mr. Carter.
If I could just add one point, because I forgot to say this, the 2% requirement really drives efficiency in a big way because the costs are still relatively high and the paybacks are longer. If somebody has to do 2% on-site renewable, they're going to do everything they possibly can to make the building as efficient as possible before they calculate that 2%. So you're not only encouraging renewable, but just like the senator suggested, you're really driving efficiency.
So you're going to overall have a big impact on reducing energy costs to state buildings. And other state bonded buildings. So, yeah, I think it really is a way of saving energy. Are there any questions about this, Senator Rummel?
I apologize for having been called out. What are some of the tools that they will use to do this 2% or to achieve the 2%?
Oh, Senator,
direct Dibble?
Your questions to.
Yeah, this is
Senator
my
Anderson.
Amendment to Senator Dibble's bill, which would be to his is about efficiency and sustainable building guidelines, and this would add the 2% okay. For state bonded buildings or state buildings to do 2% of their energy coming from. Or wait a minute. It's
2% of
they
energy.
Have to try to meet 2% of their energy needs from renewable sources, on-site renewable. So it would be either wind. They could have a wind project there on-site, or they could have a solar panels for electricity, or they could have a solar hot water.
Okay, so solar thermal would count as well.
Yes.
Solar volcanic would.
Yes.
What is that one that's in the ground and they? Geothermal.
We didn't include that just because there's some question about the when you have to add more electricity to make the system work, so you get a lot of thermal savings.
Okay,
you know,
I see.
But you add to your electricity load, and so we didn't want to say that was always an energy savings. I mean, there's a lot of interest in doing that, and it can be a really good conservation and renewable measure, but. We wanted to stick with the renewables that were definitely going to reduce their energy consumption in those buildings.
Thank you.
So I guess just to be official, we should move this amendment and incorporate it into Senator Dibble's bill. Would someone else please move this for me since I'm chairing? I don't think it's appropriate for me to move an amendment when I'm in the chair. Would anyone like to move it?
Madam Chair, I move that we insert your amendment. Amendment. Is it
into
5926? Does it have its own
yes.
number?
Yeah, it's a bill draft.
Amendment 5926 into Senate file.
Sorry.
2358.
As amended. All right. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Okay.
Thank you.
I think we're anything further, Senator Dibble?
No, we just lay this over.
Yeah, we're going to lay this over. We have a whole list of proposals, as you know, that we're going to have the committee rank and send to Senator Langseth as recommendations for inclusion in the bonding bill. Senator Parisel?
How many more of those are we going to hear?
We're almost done. We had to kick a couple off till Thursday.
Two hearing requests
have
on two of them. I have two hearing requests in for some that haven't come up.
Got one yesterday.
Oh, I guess we just got them yesterday and today, so we haven't had a chance to incorporate them. We're meeting on Thursday, and we're going to finish Thursday, so we should be able to squeeze them in, but don't tell anyone outside of the committee. We're not taking any more. Senator Pariso, you're a member of this committee, and we want to get you a chance to have your proposal.
One of them is from last year, I believe.
Well, we just got the hearing request. That's
it. I know,
it. And some
I
of them
did,
we heard last year.
I didn't get heard last year, so we just said we're going to send another hearing request.
Okay, we'll get it added on Thursday, and we're going to just do a couple more we didn't have time for today that were originally scheduled for today, and then we're going to make some final decisions on Thursday and get them to Senator Langseth. So, members, I think Mr. Jourovsky sent out an email. Everyone, please, if you want to have input into this process, try to rank what we've heard or give us a list of what your priorities are so we can incorporate that into our ranking process.
Do we have a list of everything we've heard? I mean, do we need...
We can get that. That would be
helpful.
Mr. Mueller has that on a spreadsheet, a list of all the governor's recommendations and all the other bills that we've heard. So we can get that to all the committee members. Good suggestion.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. The meeting's adjourned. Why don't you talk to me?
At least. And I don't even know what room I was supposed to be in.
Oh, well. Do you want to go talk to him?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, yeah. And I Peter showed this to me, this actually today, something else, but.
Was that the Breed of Sailor bill?
I've got two Breed of Sailor ones. I don't know if you're interested in playing.
Sure, yeah, I'd love to.
One of them we probably won't. Has a fiscal note to it, so it's probably not.
Are we going to get, this is bonding. I mean, can you get this in front of Senator Stump's committee?
I'm going to try.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. This is just my first taste. This
yeah.
one is. There's another one, a solar car.
I have the feeling.